This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast. Today in season 4, episode 87, I chat with Brisbane and distance culture runner Liam Woollett. Liam was fantastic. He's faced some serious injury issues over the years, and largely that has been shin splints, an issue that occurs at the medial part of the shin in runners. And he's had it in both legs, and on 11 occasions he talks about having stress fractures within those points. And what that has meant for him is that he's had to modify his training pretty seriously. And as he started as a half marathoner when he was 18 and 19, which is pretty young to start the half, but that was his intention. He's had to go back to the 5 and 10K over the years and still is there as a 30-year-old now, running 10K as his primary event, which is pretty cool to see because a lot of runners do get into the marathon quite quickly. And he's adamant that 10K is for him, both ability-wise, but also with this shin splints issue that he faces. He runs about 70K a week now, training with a group in Brisbane called the Distance Culture Group, who do get coached individually and meet twice a week in Brisbane itself to train together. Liam has a Sunshine Coast 10K coming up, the Brisbane 10K Champs coming up on the track, that is, and the British Brisbane 10K, where his aim is to now break the 31-minute barrier. He was there, very close to it anyway, Jeddah Jetty, just the other week, coming second place in that with a 31:10. So his hope is to break the 31 barrier in, I guess, the next few months, but eventually the sub 30 is what he really dreams of in the 10K. And if he can manage his mileage and injuries, get back to that half and full marathon. But anyway, Liam's got so much to talk about. He was part of that in-training group, which has been around for years now and so prominent prior to the last handful of years where these new running clubs come about. In-training has always been there. It's never dwindled. The runners, they're so passionate about running. So I hope you enjoy Liam as we talk about the injuries he's faced, those adjustments he's made for training, but also touch on some running news, the Sydney Marathon event itself, the Sunshine Coast 10K, which is in this weekend, and that event, and also the World Athletics Championships. That kicks off the conversation. Then he gets into his running background and finishes talking about his own podcast, the Owner's Podcast, where they talk all things running and talks about his future running this year and beyond. As always, I hope you enjoy. And if you do enjoy listening to the series, jump on Spotify, give it a rating. I'd much appreciate it. Enjoy Liam, guys. Thank you. Welcome, Liam Woollett, to the Local Legends in Running podcast.
Thanks for having me on. This is the second time today I've talked to you in the podcast. We recorded about an hour ago, and unfortunately, it didn't quite work out. So we're round two. Here we go.
I'm checking everything if it actually is recording now, and I actually the audio went through my camera, little camera on top of my computer here, Liam, and went to listen to it for the first time, and it sounded like I was in a tunnel. I'm not sure how it sounded like for you, but we're back here and looking forward to talking to you all things running.
Sounds great. Let's get into it.
Very good, mate. You've been out there for a long time as a runner. We've known of each other for a while now, I guess, but very much looking forward to delving into to your running time out there, and you're a distance culture man now, but we'll dive back further as we go along in the conversation. But mate, let's talk through the G to G event. You were there last weekend, a second place in that 10K. It was awesome to see you back in good form.
Yeah, it's good to see you out there as well. Got a great video of me running sort of in the last couple of K, which I've been looking at a lot the last week or so just to analyze my technique. But yeah, I've been doing quite a few races the last couple of months. And I did race at Jetty to Jetty about 4 years ago with my current 10K PB is there. So I know the course is quite a good one. And yeah, I kind of like, have been in quite good shape. Turn up to the race, and Nick Dewar and Rowan Hickey were the sort of the main competitors. And luckily enough, I managed to beat Nick, who's my training partner, and didn't quite get Rowan in the end, but I was very close to catching him, and I ran 31:10, which is 3 seconds off my PB of 31:07, and Rowan ran 31:06. If I was 5 seconds faster, we'd have had a PB and quite a lot more race winnings, but I'm happy with my second place and yeah, what I got from it.
Oh, so good, mate. I was out on the bike actually. I've been injured. So I was on the bike following a few runners. And as you know, you don't know who's going to be on the start line as a runner or a spectator unless it's an elite event with elite fields release. But yeah, I was out on the bike and had the camera in hand filming a few of the Bush Jerky Track Club runners who I'm a part of. And yeah, stumbled across you two. So pretty much got a bit of footage of you guys and put that up online on Instagram and managed to catch you two after the race and have a chat. So it's probably a, I guess, an influence as to why we're here this afternoon talking about your running. But by way of agenda today, Liam, let's get into a bit of personal bio stuff on you away from running, and then look at those PBs too. You've covered a few events over the years, and so much running news happening too out there. Hey, like we've got the World Cross Champs coming up, Sydney Marathon, and the Australian Athletics Champs all within a month or so. It's just going nuts. So let's talk about those. Probably Sydney is the more profound one that I think a lot of our mates and running community are looking forward to. So we'll get into that. And then your running story. You've been out there for a while and all the way back to the in-training days and the Marist College days, by the way. I went to Marist College. I'm not sure if we've made that connection yet, publicly at least, but we share that in schooling, and then your training week with distance culture and future running. You've got a few 10Ks lined up this year, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm keen to go through it all.
Let's get into you first. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself away from running?
Yeah, so it's kind of a, I guess I don't have much of an interesting story, but well, I guess as anybody who's born in South Africa would say, my dad is English, mum's South African, which is a match made in heaven. And I was born over there and then came to Australia. So I have the joy of supporting all three countries, depending on the sport that I watch, which my friends do not agree with at all. So I support England in the football or soccer, South Africa in the cricket, and Australia in the rugby, which I get abused for quite a lot for that. Always been keen on sport. In high school, I kind of wanted to go through sport to study when I finished school, and went into sports science. Finished a degree in sports science, went towards studying physiotherapy, finished that, and now I'm working at a private practice in Toowong, which is like in a sports clinic, which I really love. Like, it's awesome. You see patients from all backgrounds, all sports. Love working with runners as a main thing, because running is my sport as well, so it's good to chat to them about their goals and help them with that goal there. And outside of that, yeah, I'm not a very interesting person, unfortunately. I've just started reading books again for the first time in 10 or so years. Like, hanging out with my friends when I get the chance outside of work and running. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell.
And just tell us a little bit more about this physio work, Liam.
Yeah, it's called Performance Physio. So it's a place I wanted to work at since I was in university. I heard about it as a student, and I just sort of looked into it. And, like, it's just a great clinic with lots of facilities there. They've got, like, they're in a gym basically, so they've got all this gym equipment. They've got all this testing facilities to test out your strength, look at your, like, capacity in a lot of things. And the room for growth there is phenomenal. Like the other physios who work there are like sort of best in the field, and even though I'm a senior physio now, I still feel like I don't know as much as these guys, or no one near these guys in terms of their class. I only got the job there this year, so I was working at a different practice in Balbarrie and Kenmore, and I got a call in March this year from the boss who just had his eye on me. He said, "Look, I've got a job for you here at Toowong. Like, do you want to take it?" And before even interviewing, before even hearing anything about the job, I was like, "Yep, give me my contract in a couple of days' time, and I'll give my 4 weeks' notice to my current job." And so I've been there since March, and it's been fantastic. It's great because we also do some physio coverage for sporting teams. So I look after the St. George men's NPL soccer team, who play in the top league of Brisbane soccer, and they're elite players. Like, it's awesome to watch them play, and also cover the Mogul ladies top team as well, who I'm friends with the coach, and my sister plays for them. So that's a bit more like fun in that way too. Like, I'm friends with the players, get to hang out with them at the games and just watch some good football, which is pretty damn fun. Yeah, I mean, I love the running injuries. Any running injury, I think I'm really confident treating, and I find, like, because runners don't want to not run. And so when a runner comes to see me, because they're always against seeing a physio because they're going to get told not to run. Whereas most injuries for runners, you can run through to an extent. And so I kind of love seeing the look on their face when I say, "Well, you can still run. It's just, let's just put a plan in place to look after this." But I mean, I've had a lot of shin splints in my life. Like, that's been my main running injury. So I kind of like seeing shin splints as a physio, because I actually went to study physio because I was dealing with chronic shin splints and it wasn't getting better. So I studied physio to fix that myself. And now I'm keen to fix other people with the same kind of injuries.
Awesome, mate. Let's get into, well, firstly, Sunny Coast. You're there this weekend in that 10K, and you may have heard Ryan Gregson's in that marathon event. He's going to have a good mate of his, Brett Robinson, pacing him out there, which will be pretty exciting. New course. It's now a one lapper. It was two laps prior. So that's a huge change. And you may have also heard that that is very likely to be the Olympic Brisbane course, as these events often happen outside of the precinct in different areas. It's very likely to be up there at Majimba. So a bit of a trial this year, a bit of a pilot. And also Andy Buchanan, Liam Adams back in the half. Well, Liam's had a rather quiet year, and Andy's obviously thriving out there. And Tara Palm in that half too. She was on this very podcast only within the last week or so.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this. Like, the Sunny Coast has always been a really good event, and they've gone all out this year. Like, to get Ryan Gregson for the marathon, who's one of our best runners we've ever had on the track, to now go marathon. And then, yeah, Andy, again, the marathon record holder, he's up in Cairns right now for a training block, getting ready for the world champs. And then, yeah, even having Liam. Yeah, Liam is, again, one of the greats, and he has been quiet this year. He normally does race quite a lot, so I want to see, how well he can perform on the day. And then the ladies' field as well is a spectacular field. So I can't wait for next weekend. I'm racing the 10K, which is, going to be hot and late in the day. Hopefully I can see the marathon at some point during it.
Yeah, I was saying to you off air, I had Jason Crowther, the event director, on this podcast last week, or this week rather, on the Thursday, and he spoke about the fields, and he mentioned a few sub 30-minute 10K runners, Liam, which I know is a lifetime goal of yours to get down as fast as that, but certainly some guys to chase out there in the 10K, and that's also just a one loop and out and back north, and then traveling south now, so a bit of a change there in the 10K, and it's going to be pretty strong across the board. So looking forward to seeing how the Sunny Coast goes. I'm likely up there myself. I didn't tell you this before earlier as well. I'm in the half registered, but I'm suffering a shin injury, Liam. So a bit like yourself over the years with shin splints, it feels like that. But I kind of rolled my ankle before Gold Coast, and my physio reckons that the muscles and tendons around that medial shin part have kind of like compensated to protect and look after my calf and that area in there. So it's been a bit sore. I actually went out for a 5K jog between our first take of this podcast and second take, and it's the first run in 16 days. So I not sure what I'll do with that registration, but should be there to see you run.
Yeah, well, if you just take your foot up like crazy and get some supportive shoes and just hope to God it all goes well, then you'll get through it. Otherwise, the smart thing would be, yeah, to see how you're feeling up to that, and be smart about it.
Yeah, it's funny when you're training well how 21K can feel like a distance that is so manageable, and then you get injured, don't run for 2 weeks, and even our crazy minds think that we can't do things. And 5K felt like 21 today, so pretty unlikely I'll run it. If I do, I'll just jog that event. But let's move on to the Sydney Marathon, because that It's not far away, just over a month now. It's 27th of July, by the way. We sit here on a Sunday, and Sydney Marathon's 31st of August. And some pretty good fields here. It's a major now. It's on the calendar around the world, world major. And we've got Brett Robinson, Liam Adams, Tom DeCanto, all these guys down from South. 206 now, 207, sorry. Brett Robinson, 208, Andy. DeCanto, I think, is a 211 guy. What's exciting too is Clifford, Sam Clifford, debut. He's a ripping 10K guy, 10K Australian record holder over from Japan this year, wasn't it? That run?
Yeah, not too long ago. Yeah, he's in some really good form right now. He's definitely the dark horse for this event. And I quite like Tom DeCanto too. I really want to see him run 2 hours 10, would be awesome. Obviously, he's got a bit work to do to get that there, but he's always been up there. And hopefully, he's living in Sydney. He's going to be close to where he actually lives to run rather than traveling for it. Will be good to see. And there's money for the first Aussie place getter too in this marathon. So these guys have something to race for, which will be really cool because obviously the Kipchoges and those guys will go for the win, but the Aussies will fight it out for, I think, 30 grand prize packet. So it's
Wow.
definitely money there.
So good to see Jess Stenson in the women's, Lisa Waitman. They've been around for years, but Pompiani's the one that's more new to the marathon itself. And yeah, she was out at Gold Coast a few weeks back in the half and had run a 69 something, a second ever fastest time, and she was surrounded by heaps of guys. I went past her traveling north, and she was traveling south about 7 minutes ahead of myself. And it was so good to see her in form and heading into this event. She's no doubt gonna put it to the ladies.
Yeah, she races very aggressively too. And you've got Lisa and Jess, who are, two of the best runners we've had in the marathon for a very long time as well, who are now racing this younger girl who's been running very well this year. I'm keen to see how Lisa goes. She hasn't raced in quite a while,
Yeah.
probably not since Tokyo, I think, of last year. So I'm very keen to see how she goes. I'd love to see her run well again because I do have a big thing for her. And then, yeah, Jess, everyone loves Jess. So I'd love to see these ladies, podium potentially on the big stage. And race against Safwan Hassan, who's the favorite.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, it's exciting, particularly with Pompiani being younger. We spoke earlier about the ladies, and we've got so many in the sort of 35 to almost 50 now. I think Sinead's 48 from memory, but there's so many within that bracket. And to see ladies like Pompiani now giving the marathon a crack, it's exciting and probably inspirational too, I think. For you want to be careful starting too early, but certainly those ladies in their early to mid 20s considering the marathon as an option, that it's definitely there.
Yeah, no, it's going to happen in a month's time. We're going to see how she goes. Obviously, she's raking on that money too. So I think there'll be some personal best being attempted here in this first time major.
Yes, let's move along to the World Athletics Champs. That's happening. And it's a little bit unfortunate, I guess, that these events are going to clash a bit moving forward. It's every 2 years, the Athletics Champs, usually, unless that's going to change anytime soon. So it will just have, I guess, put runners in a position to consider which one they're doing. For example, Robinson and Adams, who are at Sydney and not in the Champs marathon team. We've got Andy in that, Tim Vincent and Liam Bowden, those two from the Gold Coast, running so good of late. Vincent, a 209 guy now. And Andy's the 206 guy I mentioned before. I was just so used to Brett being at the front, but it's Andy of most recent with that quickest Australian marathon time, a 206. So this will be very exciting in Japan. The other omission too, as you may know, Liam, is Pat Tin. And so, yeah, I've got no idea what he's up to.
Yeah, no, I think he raced the Houston Marathon earlier this year, and he ran quite well at that. I thought he'd qualify for the world champs, but I haven't heard anything about him since then. So I wonder if he's maybe injured, or just hasn't put his name into the hat to qualify for this, because the three guys we've got going, obviously Andy's the record holder, Liam and Tim, like you wouldn't normally look at that and go, oh, these guys are the ones who'd expect to go with Brett and Tien in there. But I'm really happy to see them both get picked because they're Brisbane boys. So I've grown up racing against them. And
Yeah, I
I've
was going
raced
to
with
say,
Liam quite a lot.
Pat, you'd think Pat Tien and his, and he kind of looks a bit older too. You think he's like in his mid to late 30s sometimes, but he's been around for so long as well. But is he the same age as you? Is he 30 this year?
He's 31, I think. He's a year older
Yeah.
than me. So, yeah, he's 31 at some point this year.
And is he about Doyle now, the 10K record holder Australian, Wilson and Klein in the female contingent for the marathon? And yeah, Izzy's just in ripping form. The other two ladies too, I guess, are a compliment to them. What we had noticed talking earlier was Burden, and one of those ladies too, who they require some runners to potentially from other countries not taking part of this event because of that qualifying time. So a bit of a weird one for those guys as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ranking system. So I think because the qualifying times are ridiculously fast now, and a lot of countries don't have enough runners who get the qualifying time. And so I think if they are within the rankings of the top 100 runners in the marathon, and our country has, the spots qualified to run the marathon, then they get selected to go. So hopefully, if Liam stays in the top 100, by the time the champs come around, he will go as our third runner. And so I hope that stays that way, because I'd love to see him get selected. And same with one of the girls too. I wasn't sure which one it was, but it's the same for them too. But I think the rumor is that they're both pretty safe at this stage. So unless something big happens, I think they'll both go, which would be great.
Yeah, and fingers crossed, because Liam, his progression has just been so constant, and no doubt if he were to miss out on this event, he'll be there in the future. And he's a young guy too, a tad younger than yourself, I think, Liam, in his late 20s as well. So exciting to watch him and Tim. And the 800 and 1500 lists have been released to a degree, but they're going to kind of be updated and upgraded in the sense that the release times of these teams are progressive. They kind of leak out them in three kind of announcements, and that'll be late August. So they do have Peter Boll and Peyton Craig, who have been killing it in the 800 in that list, and Peter with that recent 142, 55 in the 800, which was awesome to see. And Claudia Hollingsworth and Abby Caldwell in that 800, 158 for both of them, and they've both been running pretty well of late. I think what we need to acknowledge too is that Peyton's been knocking on the door of that 144 barrier too, and he's likely to continue to run well.
Yeah, those two guys are the two best two lap runners in the country right now. So I'm glad to see them get selected very early on, because there's no other competition between those guys than that. In the women's though, the eight, I think there's a few more runners who are, prone to go, and like Katrina Bissett as well, as I think she's the record holder for the country. So hopefully she can also get picked and qualify. And then yeah, Abby and Claudia, like very, very young and both very, very talented, who went past what's it, the first round of the Olympics. They went to, I think, the semis or the second round or whatever they call it at that stage. So very, very talented runners.
Is Bissett down at 157 now?
Yeah, okay. So, she's kind of pretty good.
Cam Myers too. He's been around now for a few years. 329 at Ostrava earlier in the year, and breaking that 330 barrier, and very close to Ollie Hall's Australian record of 329.4 something. I think it's 441, and Billings 359. So any lady who runs sub four anywhere in this in the country in the world is amazing. But also Jess Hull's got to be added to that list, and she's down at 350. So a little bit of a way there between Billings and Jess, but we'll see what happens to the addition of the 1500 meter ladies as well.
Yeah, I think Jess is guaranteed to go. I think she's probably just a formality to get picked in that. I just wonder if she'll do the 5K as well, because yeah, she was the record holder until Rose broke her record quite recently. And then for even the men, the other two runners to go, it's going to be interesting to see who can go. A lot of guys are qualifying, and a lot of guys are knocking on the door for that.
Yeah, Jess is almost in the vein of Stewie McSwain, hey? Like, so good at 1500, but so good at 5 and 10K as well. It's not common for the women as well to be running 1500 at such a high level, and a 5 and a 10.
Yeah, you don't normally see them do more than the one. It's like they have their main event and they focus on that main event. So for Jess to be smashing both the events is awesome.
Yes, 100% agree. Let's get to Liam, though. We're here for you, and this is where the bulk of the conversation is going to happen, I guess. And I want to dive right back to the schooling time, as we mentioned, at Marist College here in Brisbane. And I want to hear about too how it all started for you, because it seemed like there was another sport at play early on, and running became a second pickup of a sport that continued, I guess, post school. So let's head back to high school then.
Yeah, back in those days, quite a long time ago now. But yeah, basically, I was a football slash soccer player. So my dream was to play professional over in Europe. And I was very passionate about achieving that dream. So, every day I'd get up and get to school an hour early. When the bus dropped me off there, I'd kick a ball with my friends for an hour. Morning tea, lunchtime, same thing. Go to the oval, kick a ball around, finish school, catch the bus home, run from the bus stop back to my house, get a ball out, dribble a ball between cones in the garden until the sun went down. So I'd play, 3 to 4 hours of football every single day on school days, and then on weekends I go to the local sporting fields and do the same thing. So I was training, like there's no tomorrow, just to achieve my dream. And that was when I was 13, 14, 15, so quite young at the time. And then when I was in grade 10, we have our inter-house cross country at school, and because at Marist is quite a large school, it's not compulsory for everybody to run, whereas other schools might get every person in each grade to run the cross country. You pick the, six guys will nominate per house, and there's 8 houses per grade. So, you've got about, it's like 50-ish runners per house, or per age group running. And I nominated, and I was first reserve to run our 4K cross country race, and ended up one guy pulled out before the race started, so I ran in this race and ended up winning the whole race. And I never ran before either, so I didn't know what to expect with running. I just went out the front and I held on and won the race. And there was a guy in my grade named Max Newman, who is one of the best Ironman triathletes in the world now. He's professional and been absolutely killing it. So when I beat him, like the school coach, was so shocked, and he called my parents that night and said, "Look, can you please get him to start running at cross country training, and he'll come join the team to run at the inter-school champs in a few weeks' time." And obviously, I enjoyed winning, so I thought, you know what, I'll come run this race, and let's just have some fun, try and win the comp for the school. So yeah, I'm gonna go run this ARC champs, which was our inter-school champs. And the coach comes up to me like 3 days before and goes, "You know what, like the under 15 team we have has been winning the age group every single year, so we don't really need you to run in the under 15s. Can you run up a year in the under 16s, which is also 6 kilometers, and help them out, because they usually don't do too well?" And I kind of thought, oh well, I'm not a runner, so I'll do what I can to sort of help out. And so on the day, I ran a 6K, which was more than I ever ran before in the biggest event of the year for our school. And I won that one too, so I beat all the other schools by about 200 meters. And so it was pretty awesome. Like, I didn't expect it to happen, and I think I was just fit from playing soccer that I just had it carry over to running. But even after this, I didn't really care about running too much. Like, I wasn't interested in doing it as a career or anything. I wanted to play football still. So I didn't run again the rest of that year. And then next year comes around, I'm playing football, and the top team at my club would occasionally ask me to come play for them. I get the call up to fill in as a bench player. And I remember watching them play one day, and they asked my teammate to come and fill in for them. And I was sitting there watching the game, being like, well, if I'm not even getting picked as a reserve for a team in my club, how am I going to play professional for, Manchester United and England in a few years' time? So my dream to play football kind of died there at that moment. And it's funny enough, the next day my team coach messaged me. He says, "Hey, why didn't you reply to the coach's call last night? He wanted you to play for them." And I said, "Well, I never got called." He says, "Oh, he wanted you to play. You have to pick the second guy because you couldn't play." So it was kind of funny how fate works that way. But I made my mind up that I was, not going to focus on football anymore, and just sort of maybe go towards running as an interest. And yeah, from there I kind of really got into running and fell in love with it. And again, like football, I'm very passionate about my interests, and I've gone to running, and I've been running for well 15 years technically, on and off, with all injuries I've had. But yeah, that's how it all started.
Yeah, and I believe in training was a big part of your life. It started around late high school, Liam. I was there as I guess a shopper or a customer or client to the shop there at Milton years ago. It would have been almost 10 years ago for me being there, and you were there as an assistant, retail assistant. But I guess the background of you in your work, it lends itself to the fact that you were there, and I'd just love to hear about your experience both in that shop, but also Steve Manning. He was a founder with his wife, wasn't he, of that whole company, and then led into coaching yourself.
Yeah, so that's kind of like where my running really took off. I think, like, when I'd ran the Brisbane Half Marathon when I was 16, well, in grade 12, when I was 16, 17, and in training put these events on. So they were the runners of the Brisbane Marathon, and I came third in this half marathon. And so in the finish line, there was a lady who my mum had met in the city a few weeks earlier, who just happened to talk about running, and topic of me came up, and she'd heard of me through the cross country races. And I met this lady, and she says, "Oh, look, I know you don't have a coach right now, and I know you're quite young and you're getting into running. Like, would you want to talk to Steve, who is the owner of In Training and the event organizer?" And that lady was named Linda Watson. She's a great lady, like probably one of the people I look up to as a person who made me like running. didn't have much to do with her, but she sort of kicked things off. So she introduced me and Steve together, and yeah, he started coaching me. And then, in training was, a running shoe store, and I was young, didn't have a job, loved running. It worked out well that he offered me a job to work at the store on weekends as a casual, and it was just, yeah, a great experience. Like when you're young, like great boss, great job, great colleagues, like great customers, like, and you got products for cheap as well. So as a young guy who's running, getting shoes half price was a pretty awesome experience. And that kind of shaped my early years as a runner. Like, Steve would coach me. I'd do everything he says on his training program, and then, come to the shop, chat to my friends about running, chat to patients about running. And in training, obviously had a pretty big running backing. They had their own running groups as well, which were all around Brisbane. Where you just go to them, and there's a coach there, and they give you a session. And it's more for recreational runners and those doing, marathoners, the weekend warriors kind of thing. But it's where most of the running is, and it's a great community. And yeah, I'm very grateful that I had the chance to work there, and I worked there for 9 years too while studying. So I kind of got on well with Steve and Margot, his wife, who's also the co-owner. And yeah, that's how I kind of developed as a runner.
Yeah, let's stay there with In Training because they've been around for a long time, as we kind of alluded to there. But probably like the most prominent running group out there, especially prior to the COVID boom, and particularly around that sort of 2005-ish to 2015. That they were the group. Pat Carroll was another prominent group out there. I eventually put a group out there myself, but nowhere near the numbers that In Training were getting. Give us an idea of how many runners were a part of that or continue to be a part of that amazing brand.
Yeah, so I think at their peak they got 1,000 members to join the club, and that's like back then. To join a club, you pay a yearly membership fee, and you get your team singlet, you get access towards the coaching services, that kind of thing. And at that time, that was the biggest club in the country. So 1,000 runners would join up, and that was the number one club in the country, which was a big feat for them to achieve, because it was just a small business that managed to do this. And even now, the shop has closed down. I think they sort of stepped back from the retail business and just started focusing on the coaching itself. And it's still going really, really well for them. Obviously, with the big boom of running clubs, there's a lot more dilution of the market with running coaches and clubs. And you still can very easily see In Training runners in a marathon event or in a big event. There's always the In Training runners there. So they've held on quite well to what they have.
Yeah, there's definitely like a different breed that the true traditional runner and the group back then was largely a paid for expedition for both runners and the coaches that they set up these groups that it was never costly to join up to these groups, but it was almost always paid for. And it seems now that with all the running groups popping up that almost all of them are a free thing, which is great for access, but it does sort of lend itself to the ones who just want to sort of dabble in it, might do bit of cross training or the hybrid stuff, and then they're back out there with this running scene. Is that something you sort of noticed post-COVID as well, that has changed?
Yeah, it's a huge thing now. Like, and I guess the big thing too, like a lot of running clubs are now like kind of like the dating things as well. Like they go to this running group, and it's like a dating opportunity rather than running for an event. I think the big thing was with their groups was like, obviously you're training for a marathon, and that was their main thing. Like you've got a marathon training plan here. You're paying for the coach to come and give you sessions to coach you, and then also coach you outside of the group sessions here too. So that was the big buy-in from that there. Whereas now, yeah, running's a lot more social. Like the boom from post-COVID has made a lot more runners, and it doesn't make there's more marathon runners out of it, but people getting into running as a sport, which has been great. Not great for race entries though, because every race sells out so fast now, which is quite annoying, because I've always been someone who will sign up for a race the week of the race, because I've got a lot of injury history, and now I've got to sign up for a race 2 months out, otherwise it gets sold out, which I don't like spending that much money early on when I may get injured and not run. But that's part of the process now. Running is booming, and it's good.
Yeah, well, for those who do know of you, or just meeting you, I guess, in this conversation for the very first time, maybe are one of those post-COVID runners. Let's go back to when you're sort of 18, 19. Because that coach changed for you and your direction, I guess, changed too, not just within those couple of years, but then a few years after, where you battled, unfortunately, a number of injuries. Let's go back to the Liam of 18 and 19 years of age and what it looked like there.
Yeah, so that's kind of like a big turning point in my life, I'd say, not just as a runner. Like things are going quite well with being coached by Steve. I was studying sports science at university as well, so sort of in my area of interest with working. And I just kind of like never really had injuries beforehand. Like playing football for 9 years, never got injured as a kid. And even my first year of running, I'd gone quite well. I was running like 100K a week or so consistently and doing well. And for some reason, when I was 18, 19, I just had these injuries start to pile up. And like I'd take time off running, and you know I'd rest, and I'd let it settle. I'd come back to running again, and then I'd run well for a few weeks, and I'd get injured again. And it was always a few different things popping up. There was one big part where in 2014, when I was 19, I had a hamstring injury that was very innocuous. Like I was running across the road, a car was coming, so I picked the pace up, felt the hammy kind of go, but still jogged home. Like it wasn't bad, but rather than do the smart thing and kind of like acknowledge the fact that I'd hurt myself and take the time off and see a physio and strengthen it, I just kept running on it, and I made it worse and worse and worse, and to the point where it was basically hurting 24/7. I was in chronic pain. Like it was always there. I couldn't sleep on my right hand side because it was pressure of the bed on my hammy was causing me pain. And I had to stop running. And it took me a year before I started running again. And back when I was that age and very passionate about running, like it was traumatic to have to go through the experience of working in a running shoe store, seeing runners every day that I'm there, doing sports science at university. So all my friends that are playing sport or are talking about sport at uni. And for me to not do it was quite hard. So, I eventually got back into running, but the next thing started after that, and I ended up getting shin splints, and that has been my main injury. This was 2017 or 2016, 2017, we're talking here, which still bothers me today in 2025. I was running, again, running quite well, and then next minute I had this pain in my shin, which I just kept running through, and it turned into a grade three stress reaction, and I ended up having them on both shins at the same time. So left and right were both had this reaction, and then took the time off, got back to running, and then again got two more stress reactions, different parts of the shin, and it basically happened 11 times. So I had 11 shin stress injuries over the last sort of 7, 8 years, which equated to probably 3 to 4 years off running in that period of time. And the whole time I wanted to run, the whole time I would love to get back to running again, but I just couldn't do it. And I think that shaped a lot of my experiences in life and running, is just the fact that I couldn't run. And that's why I went to study physio after I finished my sports science degree, because I couldn't run. Wanted to help myself, wanted to help other people as well. And yeah, I guess here we are now as a physio, and doing somewhat well with my running.
Yeah, I'd like to dive into the shin splints issue. As I mentioned earlier, Liam, I'm suffering this shin issue at the moment, which I'm pretty adamant isn't shin splints because it seems to be in like a gradual onset of a change, and usually it's and largely the increase of mileage. Something's got to change to really spark that. But what a lot of runners do mix up is that there's sort of three stages, right? The shin splints, the stress reactions, and then now we've got a fracture, and it's a case of having time off. And it's not just the case of, hey, like I say, a sprained ankle, have or even a broken bone is probably a better example, where let's say a broken arm even, and the doctor will say, hey, here's a cast of 6 weeks, take that cast off, and you're likely going to be good for the rest of your life unless you do it again. How is shin splints such an aggravating and persisting issue for yourself and athletes out there?
Yeah, it's just one of those ones where like there's a lot of factors that go into it, and I've been seeing studies, and it shows like runners who get shin splints, it could take you 3 to 4 months to just to run with tolerable pain after dealing with it for a while. It's just one of those injuries that just tends to really just put you out of the sport for a while. And like the thing is, like shin splints itself is a blanket term, and you can run through like the basic shin splints to an extent. So if you've got pain on your shins, it's quite vague, and it goes up the whole border of your tibia. It's more, they call it medial tibial stress syndrome, where it's just like the muscles pulling on the bone a little bit, or pulling on the periosteum. And it's not caused any concrete damage yet, but it's just a warning sign of damage to come if you keep pushing through it. So you can run through that to an extent. Obviously, it's best to limit your running while it's there to let it settle down, but it's not going to give you a stress fracture in that moment. If you keep running through it, it'll eventually cause, a stress reaction, which is edema in the bone, and then lead to a stress fracture. And then running through a stress fracture can lead to a full bone break. So I've seen a patient at work who he had his entire tibia snap in half. He ran through a stress fracture, had to get surgery for the whole thing, which was not a good experience for him. So I think the biggest telltale sign of progress is, if you can map out the area of pain on your shin in centimeters and greater than 10 centimeters is it's just the shin splints kind of pain. It's the first level of it. See that, keep an eye on it, don't let it progress. If it's under 5 centimeters, it's more likely you've got either a stress fracture or a stress reaction. So if you're dealing with pain yourself and your area of pain is shrinking, you've got to back off the running because it could progress, and you don't want to do that because it's usually
Yes.
8 to 12 weeks off running with the stress fracture.
Yeah, fortunately, I think to a degree, footwear's changed the rates of those injuries with the shins, but definitely still a prevalent injury out there. But let's continue along this running journey because the half marathons were taking place at this time, weren't they? And you sort of went back to the 5 and 10K as well, those old Twilight events out at UQ, run by in training as well, and also over the east side of Wynnum, they had two. And I guess you had a few wins there, like you're a part of both the brand, but also a runner out there who was doing pretty well in those events.
Yeah, they were good fun. I miss those days. They used to do the Twilight events, and it was like, it was an afternoon run, an afternoon fun run, which you don't
Oh,
normally
yeah,
see. They were
that's right, I
all morning
forgot. Yeah,
ones.
afternoon, yeah.
So yeah, my first half marathon ever actually was when I was 16. I ran the Twilight half marathon at St. Lucia, and that was my first half marathon. My longest run was 16K beforehand. I went for a jog a week before to do 16K. Got through that and thought, you know what, we'll do this half marathon. And reason I did it was because me and a friend saw the singlet you get for signing up for the half marathon, and it was this really, really cool looking green lightning singlet that just looked amazing to us 16-year-olds. And so we did this race just to get the singlet, and I somehow came third in this race. Like, I don't know, I started 30 seconds behind the start of the race, thinking I just jog it with my friend and just finish, in 2000th place. But I found myself moving up through the pack as the run went on, and yeah, ended up coming third in my half marathon, which was awesome. And then we did the Brisbane half marathon as well, was also done by in training. And then the Twilight Bay run, which is the one at Wynnum, which I was doing a lot of halves back then. And because when Steve was coaching me, he liked the long distance stuff, and I quite liked the thrill of doing a half marathon, and how sore you were after you finish. You pull up sore for days and days, and you feel like you've been hit by a bus. And I liked that feeling back then because it just felt like you'd accomplished something. And I think I just had the goal to be a marathon runner when I was quite young, to push on to that distance. But I think obviously when I started to break down, I kind of realized that marathons weren't for me at that age, at that point. And I kind of thought, let's go back towards 5 and 10 Ks and focus on that until, until you get old enough that you can't run as fast anymore. Then we'll try for half marathons again.
Yes, yeah, so what did you learn through that period in terms of mileage and even the way you were running or the footwear? Of course, the footwear changed dramatically after 2019 when Kipchoge was part of that Breaking 2 project and the super shoe, so to speak, came in. But it was very different back then. And as you sort of mentioned, you were quite sore even after 10K events in these flatter shoes. Was that something you looked at or did you see any physios moving forward from that point?
It's kind of funny because, like, you didn't think about these shoes back then because they weren't available to knowledge. Like, you wanted to go for the flattest shoe you could wear, almost a barefoot shoe to run in these
Yeah, as
events. And
light
that
and as
was just
fast
the
and
best
flat as,
thing. Yeah. Because I remember I had a pair of DS Racers from ASICS, which I still had even a couple of years back, just in my cupboard as like a shoe I wear to the gym. And wearing it, you're like, Jesus, it's uncomfortable. Like, how do you run fast in these shoes versus the carbon plate shoes when they came out? So I think the carbon shoes make a huge difference to how hard you can run in training as well, and how hard you can race. Like, you pull up a lot more fresh after wearing these shoes. And that's why I think so many guys are now, or so many runners are now running a lot faster in these world champs and Olympic races, because the shoes make you pull up fresher after hard runs, so you can train harder and then you can race harder too. So I like the technology for that thing there. Obviously back when they came out, it was, you couldn't get a pair of them. Like, the demand was so high, supply was so low, that if you could get a pair, you only ever raced in them. You didn't wear that to
Yeah, that's
training
right.
because it wears them out. But now it's like I've got 5 pairs in my cupboard that, two are in the box still from for racing, and 3 are ones I use for training. So the supply is now a lot bigger.
So training changed a bit there. Coach changed the direction, I guess, with the injuries meant that you had to have some time off. But yeah, what did you learn through that period that actually changed with training? Because I guess this will lead into your experience of the last sort of handful of years with distance culture.
Yeah, so I guess I'll go into the distance culture side of things. With Steve, was going really well with the coaching, but obviously I had these injuries that was just knocking me out for long periods of time. And I spent, a year off with the hamstring injury, and then I came back, and then, I was back for a year, and then had the shin splints put me off for another couple of years. So I changed coaches to John Pearson, who's an ultra marathon coach. very conservative with his training. He got me running really well. So he would check in with me very regularly. We'd go through, very conservative mileage of my running. Wouldn't be running too hard at all ever. Never really pushed myself beyond, like 90% of my capacity. And with him, I ran my first sub 15 5K at 2016 Nationals in Sydney. So we obviously did quite well. And then, after that, I kind of thought, well, I've been going quite well here, like, and I've been training solo for a year now because we do correspondence. I want to join a club where I can run with people and have training partners. And I joined a group called On Track, led by Ben Norton, which has got a couple Olympians in that squad now, Cara Fane-Ryan, who
Oh, yeah, yes.
she's a Paris Olympian. And then Adam Fogg came from that squad as well, who was a really good friend of mine back then. He's up there. He's a professional runner now. Hasn't quite gone to Olympics, but he's qualifying for them. It's just when you're a British athlete, the competition's very, very high. So hopefully he can rise the ranks
Oh, he's
and
improved
qualify for
rapidly. They've
LA.
both been on here twice, actually, as well. A bit like yourself,
Yeah, there you go.
Liam.
I was great friends with Foggy. He's a good guy, and I went to that squad and joined them and trained really hard with them. And that's when the shin splints did start because it was harder running, and unfortunately just had. I think I joined them in 2017, and I probably ran maybe for 1 year out of the next 3 years I was there. Like I spent more time not running than I was running, and at that time I was in my physiotherapy degree, studying it, learning more about what to do to treat it, and hitting the gym and really getting strong as I can. And eventually I kind of got to a point where I was driving an hour to go to these training sessions each week because it was quite a far
Wow.
place from my house. I eventually kind of thought, you know what, like I kind of like it here, but I think I need to change my training program again and just maybe go more conservative. Track may not be for me with how much my shins don't like it. So I joined Distance Culture. So I had a few friends who had ran with Distance Culture before. And I kind of joined there thinking, I'll just be more conservative again, run with some guys who are closer to my ability, and also just have a bit of fun with running again. The drive wasn't an hour, it was only about 5, 10 minutes to UQ from where I lived. And the moment I joined that squad, I never looked back. Like the guys in the squad, the guys and girls in the squad are fantastic. And Michael, the coach, is like the best guy you could ever meet. Like he's just a hands down great person. And since being there, like I've found my sweet spot for running. I found my enjoyment for running again, and I've been racing really well against his boys because they are, quite a talented group. And I really enjoy just hanging out with them as well. Like they're friends as well as training partners too. And I've been there since 2019, and I don't plan on leaving them.
Yeah, I'll just explain distance culture a little bit more to us, Liam, because as we mentioned, most of the run groups now are quite casual. Here's a meeting spot, let's go for a jog kind of thing. But they're kind of old school distance culture in the sense that every athlete in that group is individually coached. And then within that, you guys will still meet together twice a week, I think, formally, isn't it? And otherwise, you're doing a lot from home, but on an actual program that has been led from that coach, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So like, I think Mike does it because he just loves us too much. He just he loves coaching. So it started, I think, like 10 to 15 years ago. Michael and Darryl Crook, who was a national steeplechase medalist, came together. They were really good friends, and Mike or well, Crookie asked Mike to coach him just to see what they could achieve together. And obviously things went really well. We got a national medal for steeplechase, and he's got a few squad records as well as one of the best runners. I actually saw Crookie about an hour ago. He came to my house to
Oh,
check out a
yes.
calf injury, so hopefully he's gonna fix that and get back to running. But it started with those two, and then it gradually got bigger and bigger. Like a few of Cookie's friends came in, a few of Mike's friends came in, and some sort of original members were like Grant Williams, Rob Collins, Nick Dewar, Brandon Dewar, Matt Carlson, Jamie Laverty, Jay
Oh,
Twist,
Matt Carlson,
Chris
he's
Bracken.
disappeared.
Matt Carlson, yeah, he's over in America right now, but he for those who know him, he was
He
the
was the
top dog of
runner.
Brisbane running. He was the runner. Yeah, he
Run
was.
won the Bridge to Brisbane, right?
He did. He win all the state titles, and the nicest guy too, the absolute nicest guy. So with these good runners in the squad, like we had a bit of a name for ourselves, or all of them had a name for themselves. And it's quite a small squad still. And in the last sort of 5 years, like a lot of those guys have got married and had kids now. So running has taken a bit of a back step for them. So I don't quite see a lot of the guys quite as much as I used to when I first joined up, but they still come to the sessions and they still hang out with us. And sort of we have smaller squad now, like there's some really good runners as well. And yeah, Mike just coaches us all individually, but he'll give us the sessions to do. And depending on what we're training for is what we'll do, and depending on who else is doing the same event as us, they'll do the same session as us. So yesterday we trained at White's Hill Reserve and we had, I think, seven guys there all do the same session, where on any other week you might have two guys do one thing, three guys do another, one guy do this and one guy do that. So it always vary all over the place with what our plans are, but when it does come together, it's a great session, and I love the sessions we have.
Yeah, talk about then the week of training, Liam, because from Monday to Sunday, it must be a thing now where you're looking at reducing that mileage and being very particular about those shins, and the chance of doing that injury again must be high after doing it 11 times. So how does that week look for you, and what else bides time away from the actual running part of the week?
Yeah, so when you have one stress fracture, the risk of getting a second one goes up sixfold, and that risk multiplies each time as you get a new one. So when I have 11 stress fractures, stress reactions, I've got 66 times more likely to get another one as well. So that was part of the process, trying to find the right mileage for me, and I think I've finally found it now. Unfortunately, I can't run a hell of a lot because of this. So I run 4 days a week, so Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Tuesday will be speed session, so I'll do probably like a threshold tempo based thing. I do that solo because when our squad trains Tuesday night, I have to work. So I'll be solo in the morning doing my own thing there. I'll do my long run on Thursday morning. So I'll do 23K for a long run just around where I live in Westlake, on the hills around through here. I will do a session on Saturday with the squad generally. So that's usually a speed session. So a bit quicker, more faster reps there. And Sunday, I'll do like a medium long run. So 16K. So all in all, I'm doing about 65 to 70Ks a week. But what I make up for in the lack of distance that I do, I do on the elliptical machines at the gym. So the cross trainer machine, seen a lot of pro runners spend a lot of time on these machines in the gym for extra fitness and reduced load through the body. And since I've been doing that, I've found my fitness has improved a hell of a lot. So I'll spend about 3 hours a week on this machine, so Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I plan to increase that as well, over the next few months as I now have more time. To sort of train harder on the weekends. So hopefully I can get about 5 hours a week of cross training and about 5 hours a week of running into my routine. So be quite busy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that you can run a 31-minute 10K of training 4 days a week. And it's certainly inspiring for those who are unable to do that because of similar reasons or for other factors. But do you think if you actually could feel that time, that elliptical time with running, that you would be better? And if so, by how much?
That's a good question. I've been trying to ask myself that same question too. I think I look at the risk to reward ratio. So like if I did try that and it worked out, then great, like awesome. I've got that there. And I do reckon that the fitness is better from running because that is what you're training for. I definitely would prefer to run rather than cross train to get this extra benefit. But again, like the risk is quite high for me. And I think maybe I will eventually start to try and increase my running mileage down the track. But right now I found what's working for me. And the cross trainer, I don't pull up sore at all from that there. I feel like I've worked quite hard and I wouldn't say I enjoy it, but I see the value in cross training. But yeah, if you're someone who can run big mileage, I'd rather do that than cross train. It's just for someone like me who does tend to break down quite easily with doing too much, I just have to do it and it's just part of it. I just watch, videos on my phone while I'm on it and just sit in and focus for an hour, which yeah, it's hard. It's hard mentally to do that, but again, good mental training.
Yeah, it does get me to think about the fact that you're still considering that at the age of 30 when it was happening as late as what, 13 years ago where this started. Like, do you think from a young age, even from birth, that you were destined to have shin splints, or do you think the shin splints were brought on by the increased running and now you manage it because of the risk of doing it again, as you mentioned, that sixfold effect?
Yeah, I think like looking back, I guess we had the chat 2 hours ago and I didn't really have a good answer for that back then. But I think now I kind of realize like looking back, like I went through a technique change with my coach just before this happened. So I was always a heel striker, like quite a heavy heel striker too, probably overstrided as well.
That's
But
it.
like obviously I had the hamstring injuries and the knee injuries from that before the shin splint started. And we went more to a 4 foot strike, which again, your running style doesn't actually dictate your injury risk. It just dictates where your injuries will appear if you do have stupid training load. So, I had dumb training load before. My knees and hammies would get sore. I changed to a 4 foot strike, and that changed the load to my calves and Achilles and ankles. So, As I changed to that 4 foot strike, my calves then overloaded, my shins then picked up. So I think that's why I became predisposed to it. Playing football for 9 years, I never got a single injury ever. So I could run in unsupportive shoes all day, every day, and never got injured. But when I went to became a runner and did these kind of things, that's when it overloaded it. So looking back now, I realize that it was my 4 foot strike that led to it. But again, if I kept as a heel striker, maybe I would have had more hip and knee injuries leading up. So it's all just part of the process.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I experienced that myself, and but back then too, Liam, at a similar age, and I thought, and I still believe that the factor was I was playing a lot of rugby union at the time in boots that are very flat, and you might know that what about 10 years ago, maybe a tad more, they introduced like higher set boots. ASICS were pretty revolutionary with the way that they just had that heel toe offset a bit more like a jogger, but back then they were super flat. And I was thinking this must be contributing to that load through the calf and that shin area, and then trying to run as well. Like, do you think potentially, although it doesn't look directly affecting you now, that maybe it did without you realizing before heading into the running?
Yeah, it definitely could be a thing. Like I did remember going through a lot of football boots. Like I would break my boots quite quickly because I was playing 3 4 hours a day in them, and I'd go home and put them on in the backyard to run around, and go to school and put them on before school to kick a ball around. So I suppose like if they were like more of a barefoot shoe, which they are, I wonder if it strengthens your feet if you can handle it. So back when I was younger, maybe my feet got quite strong because they had these barefoot shoes and I was in them all day every day, and then when I started running, I'm wearing these big supportive shoes that my feet lose the strength. And I did have orthotics when I started running, which, I mean, yeah, as a physio, I know the evidence about orthotics is not great to be using them long term for treating injuries, but short term obviously helps with that. But the orthotic use does tend to reduce your muscle strength in your feet after 12 weeks of wearing them constantly. So I wonder if I just got a lot weaker from the lack of these more restrictive barefoot shoes that I could have worn instead, and then went towards the big cushion shoes. But no, it's still in the past now.
Yeah, it's so complex, isn't it, to work out exactly those leading factors. And I've been in orthotics actually for 10 years now, Liam. So not sure how long I'll continue for in them, but for now they're a staple for me. But let's move in a bit of a different direction. You've this year for the first time released another running podcast out there. There's so many joining the group. It seemed like 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago now for me when I started this. I recall a good mate's podcast being out there at the time, Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat. You might have heard of those guys. Bunch of older guys, 3 to 4 of them, have run that successful podcast for as long as I have. But it seemed like there were no others. And now there are a number out there, and you've added yours now to the list. And it seems, again, to be a few guys involved in that project.
Yeah, it's called the Honest Athletics Podcast. So a friend of mine, Connor McLaren-Kennedy, he has a website of running news. He loves just reporting on running, and he kind of came up to me last year with the idea to do a podcast together. And obviously, I was like, well, it's a classic, because I think everyone's doing podcasts these days. I don't want to be sucked into this whole like this toxic environment of people doing podcasts and talking about stupid things that most people talk about with the whole making money in crypto and that
Yes,
kind of stuff.
yeah.
And I just think I don't want to be involved in that, but he's like, look, let's just talk about running and physio. You're a physio, you're a runner, you're a running coach, you're a sports scientist. Like, why don't we use your mind to talk about the science behind running and that kind of thing, and my mind to talk about like the journalism and the race reports, that kind of thing. So started off, just doing like, talking about injuries. Like, come on, this week it's shin splints, this week it's Achilles pain,
I
and
noticed
how do you
that,
treat that
yeah.
kind of thing. And then after a few weeks, I was like, well, look, I'm kind of running out of ideas to talk about injuries. We covered the main ones. And it's pretty dry conversation too. Like physio podcasts are boring. And I've tried listening to some. I just can't get through it because it's just boring. So I kind of thought, well, let's try and make it a bit more fun, spice it up, give people things they might enjoy with like, we do like, would you rathers with we do two really weird running concepts, and would you rather do this or this? Or we give like, rankings of certain foods you eat before a run, that kind of stuff. And then we had my other friend Jackson McClure jump on as well as a third host. And it's just nice with three hosts. I think you can talk to each other, go a bit of back and forth. And then we kind of got to a point where we thought, well, let's try and get some guests on. And kind of just messaged the people randomly. Like he messaged Steve Monteghetti, who came on our podcast, who never met us before ever,
Yeah, I
and just
saw
came on
that.
our podcast. He's the nicest guy. And then Adam Fogg again, because I'm good friends with him. And then Joe Berry, too. Barrier Tour from Tim and Elite in America. So getting quite a few elite athletes coming on the podcast to chat about themselves has been quite fun. And I think, yeah, the direction of that, I don't know what's going to happen. Connor's going to move to the UK in 2 months. So we'll keep it up because it is his podcast. We'll keep doing it. But obviously the time difference and working at guests is going to take a bit of a hit based off that. But I mean, I'm enjoying it. It's pretty good fun. So give it a listen. I mean, I find it can be quite dry at times, but it's also some pretty funny moments, I hope too. So hopefully the good matches out the bad.
Yeah, I wish you guys the best of luck out there, and I'll feature on that myself within the next few weeks. And yeah, looking forward to being on the other side of the microphone. I've done that once before on that Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat to talk about my background and be a guest. And it felt very strange to not be hosting. I feel like I've got more control as the host, and I was probably a little bit more anxious on that one. So hopefully I can get it together for you guys on the Owners podcast. But let's get to your future running. You've got a few 10Ks lined up, of course, Sunny Coast this weekend, and yeah, that sub 31 is looming. But I guess that sub 30, it's got to be like, it's such a magic marker to break. And when you look back at your running time, you want to, no pun intended, have those times at the level that you always dreamt of. So what is the plans for this year and beyond?
Yeah, so I think the goal has always been sub 30 for 10K. I mean, my lifetime goals, we've had three goals. So sub 15, 5K, which I've done. I ran a 14:27, so thinking towards sub 14. Then sub 30, 10K was my first ever running goal when I was 15. Well, when I was 17, I actually started to want to run as a sport. And then a sub 70 half marathon was my third goal. So I've got close to the sub 70 half marathon. The 10K, arguably my weakest distance I've ever done. I've not raced a lot of 10Ks up until this year, where I've kind of done quite a few the last sort of few weeks to months. And I did the Gold Coast 10K about 3 weeks ago, and I've been in really good shape lately. And unfortunately, just on the day, just things didn't quite go to plan. And I was on pace to run about 30, 45, and at 9.4 came up, my body just shut down and I collapsed on the floor. And I was talking to Drew Williams after the race for my training group, and we're talking about what happened and trying to run the sub 30. He goes, "Look, like you're running 65 Ks a week, like getting a sub 30, 65 Ks a week is going to be pretty damn hard." And so, it does bear the question that do I have to actually run more, or will I get away with just cross training more as well on that point? So that's going to be big thing to overcome. But yeah, Sunny Coast next weekend. I've got the Queensland 10,000 meter championships the week after that on the track. So I'm going to really, really hammer for sub 31 at both these events, really, and hopefully at the state 10K champs, I might go a bit under that because it's flat and fast. And then, yeah, next year, if things go well this year, I'll be going for that sub 30. That's the big goal.
Yeah, so the half marathon too, back on the cards, bring back the 18, 19-year-old Liam. And obviously the challenge now is the fact that, as Drew mentioned, if you're struggling to potentially lower the 10K on 65K, how on earth are you going to do that for a half or even a marathon at some point in your life?
Yeah, that's a question I've got to ask myself down the track. I think, like personally, I think I can do it with the cross training. Like I have time. Like I have more time in my days now, to do this. So working and then just come home and I can just sort of train outside of work as much as I want. I'm gonna try and fit in double days on elliptical, maybe increase my distance run on the days that I do run, but not run an extra day. And I think when I get to a half marathon, I would like to do it after I have lost the speed for my 5 and 10K. So I'd love to go. Lots of attempt to sub 14 and obviously go for the sub 30. Then maybe if I do that, or if I don't do that and I get slower, then I'll go back towards a half marathon. But right now I think I've got probably another 2 or 3 years at least before I even try it. So I'm happy with my current capacity with my 5 and 10K.
Yeah, agreed. And at 30, you want to be injury free and enjoying your running first and foremost. And that comes from being injury free, doesn't it? And as you mentioned, running with mates and distance culture as you continue through there. Hey, Liam, massive thanks again for today. And whoever I talk to who doesn't listen to this, I'll tell them very clearly that you are willing to come back on the podcast after audio issues, but not a week or so later on the same day. But it takes two of us. Luckily, we love talking about running, and we've gone what, about 50 or so minutes here, and we were about an hour 10 on the first one. So either we haven't covered things because we thought we already did, or we've done it a lot more efficiently. So I'll have to tune in to this again in the editing process, and maybe even use some stuff from the first episode to chuck in to make it a bit more I guess smooth.
I think I must have cut down a lot of my rambling to make it fit into the 2 minutes here, because that first one was a lot of me talking nonsense for a long time. So I'm glad we got the chance to do it again, because I think this sounds a lot better, hopefully. And hopefully the listeners can appreciate it and learn a thing or two about, the injuries, and not to give up with injuries as well. Like the cross trainer is a really good option for those who can't run. And if
Definitely.
you are training for a race and you can't actually run, honestly, the cross trainer can be a godsend. So look into it. It's not the most fun you're going to have, but it's how you get to that start line.
Awesome, mate. I've had plenty of runners on here on two occasions, and not for audio issues, just by the fact that they've been on here and know how it works and want to come back on. So you're welcome back anytime. And again, thank you for jumping on here, particularly to be open and honest, and as a physio as well, to talk about those injuries clearly, about how they occur and what you can do to overcome them. So again, thank you, Liam Woollett.
It's been great. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, mate.